Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others.
People are scared to change, right? So what happens is when you do the work that we've done on ourselves, that shit is a lot, man. And it's like,
I know you
felt it yourself. You felt the change. You've had to change from one space in life to a completely different space in life. Most people don't want to do that, man. Most people are afraid to go from here to there because now who am I when I get over to be here, right? Mm-hmm. Who am I? Who do I become now that I'm challenging all of my old belief systems, all of my old ways of thinking and ways of doing? Now that puts me in this box over here. Oh, shit. I don't know that box over there. I'm used to this box over here. So let me just stay in this box over here.
Yeah. And because once you know better, you do better. People don't want to do better. So they rather not know better.
Because you know why? Because it takes effort to do better, right? It takes you got to put in effort. And frankly, man, a lot of people lazy. I just keep it real. A lot of people are lazy. They don't want to do that level of work. So they're like, man, forget that. I'm just going to stay hanging out on the corner. I'm going to keep cheating and womanizing and doing all of these things that they don't enhance your quality of life.
Yeah. So tell us about Trauma Bond.
Yes. Trauma Bond is that's another big buzzword that you hear coming around. But it's true. I really do believe that what happens is when we talk about trauma bond, people bond from this having similar traumatic experiences. And because of their similar traumatic experiences, they'll stay together. Right. And I'll share a story with you that recently happened that kind of it put me on my toes like, dang, like this is crazy. There was a couple in a relationship, a man and a woman. And in both of their relationships, their father was abusive to them. Right. So when they would get into arguments, they would say, oh, you're just going to abuse me like my dad used to. Right. And they would literally say this to each other. And that was the crux of their bond. Right. They literally bonded based off of their father being abusive to them. And they begin to display some of those same patterns like that. The subconscious patterns that were given to them, they started displaying those same and subconscious patterns. And frankly, I had to stop working with them because they weren't willing to do the work. So I had to pass them off to another good relationship coach that I think can help them out a little better than I can. But when we talk about trauma bond, people stay in lasting relationships based off of trauma bonding. And that is one of the most unhealthy things that you can do, in my personal opinion.
Yeah. I didn't know about trauma bonding until I got in that, and I thought it was falling in love. And this is why, at least for me, I'm a researcher. I don't have a degree, but as human being, I love learning.
Yes.
And especially firsthand experiences when that happened to me. And then I learned what falling in love is and what it isn't. And I was like, oh, and then I learned I felt in trauma bonding and it wasn't love. Yes. And then I had to learn what depression was. I never experienced depression until 2020.
Wow. Like,
I know it sounds crazy, but when I experienced it, I was confused. Yeah. And then I had to research about it. And I was like, oh, this is what everyone is. Because a lot of people wearing it as a badge of honor too. You probably notice nowadays. Like I haven't had a roommate that has a t-shirt that says like, I am my something anxiety and depression and like smiley face and emo, and he's like happy about it. And I was just like, okay, it's good to know where you're coming from, but like, how's that a badge of honor. Like, yeah. Is that, I know it's destroying your life because you mention it all the time. What are you doing about it? But anyway, different story. But then when I noticed that it lasts for 10 months, because mm-hmm. I also never noticed, because it was I was like a scientist who has that disease and mm-hmm. I had to like cue it and doing all like a movie scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that, at least for me, and I'm guessing it's for the same for a lot of people, depression was like a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And that Absolutely. Person was like a drug, because mm-hmm. I didn't like feeling in the rut. But when I was thinking with the trauma bonding in that person, it felt so good, like that mm-hmm. drug that you get in your brain. And I was still there in that shit. And I've interviewed and I've spoken to a lot of people actually went through real physical pain and real drugs. Mm-hmm. And there, I couldn't help noticing a similarity. And I don't know the scientific terms, but there is like these things in our brains that taking a drug,
endorphins.
When we take it, does, yeah.
And releases endorphins in the brain. Endorphins is a chemical. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
That's those emotions that are released are called, they're actually chemicals that are released in our brain called endorphins, which mm-hmm. is crazy that you said that, because I was going to say this at some point in time during the interview. This is a great time. What you were in is called I call it the crazy eight cycle. Right. And what the crazy eight cycle is, it's literally like a figure eight, like mm-hmm. you're going back and forth in a loop, constantly going back and forth. One end of that spectrum is that sadness that you're talking about, that sadness, the depression, the trauma bond, all of those things. Like in some relationships, those make you feel alive. Although they're sad things, they make you feel alive. Literally, like it's real stuff, man. It's fascinating. Science is crazy. Yeah. Like it really is. So those things that, although it's sad, it make you feel alive. But then there's the other end of the spectrum too, where you get into arguments and fights and those type of things, and that makes you feel alive, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens is you constantly bounce back and forth from the depression to the fighting to just beefing and all of that stuff. And eventually, here's where makeup sex comes into play. Like when you have makeup mm-hmm. sex, it gives you an adrenaline rush, and it's like, oh yes. But then you go right back down to that sad level and it starts all over again. So mm-hmm. I call it the crazy eight cycle. That's crazy you said that.
Yeah, I've experienced it. I don't want to be there. And again, I'm sure as a human being, it might happen mm-hmm. again. But like knowing now, and I'm like, okay. And I've spoken to a person, and like quick story how I would get into those relationships and I thought I was better than that. And mm-hmm. then she mentioned, she was just like, somehow, maybe it's because I don't feel like I deserve better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at a point now, because of 2020, especially,
mm-hmm.
I'm not bullshitting myself anymore, 100%.
Yes.
If someone says something, even if I might feel like they're wrong at the moment, I'm mm-hmm. going to take it as consideration and see what they're talking about, because obviously unless they want to be malicious, they're saying shit, but like people who care usually because they see something and I cannot see. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay. And someone else also mentioned about trauma when I was a kid. And that's the reason I was not searching, but like subconsciously keeping certain people in my life.
Yeah.
And when I noticed that, I was like, oh, and I had to look into that. And there's like so much work that I'm doing and that I need to keep doing. And I've noticed, and being a scientist, like working with those things myself and not bullshitting myself because mm-hmm. I need to grow and I want to grow.
Yes. Wow. Yes. And that's the best and the scariest part of the journey. I'm going to just keep it real with you. When you realize like, okay, I have more work to do. And then it's like, damn, I got more work to do every day. Yeah, every day is a work. It's like, damn.
I thought I was fine. That's how I fell in it.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's a great spot to be in, because you realize that you've already bottomed out. You hit your lowest point that you can possibly go into life. Now you're able to build a solid foundation to really be who you need to be, your authentic self.
Can a lack of sex break a relationship? And before you answer that, I was in a relationship where we didn't do it for 6 months. And I was, the more we didn't do it, I felt in a different, not different kind of love, but I transcend into a love where I feel like a lot of people aren't there, and I wasn't there until that happened. I was able to love that person beyond the physical.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. I know that's not a norm, because when that happened, I was like shocked. I didn't know either, but now I'm able to do that because I experienced it, and I actually love that so much better because you can look like a Fantastic Four, like the Beast, and I can still love you because I love you beyond the physical.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, sex, how important is sex, or is it?
It's probably the number one thing in relationships. Like if you're in a relationship and you're too healthy, and when I say healthy, I mean emotionally healthy people, because if there's issues of some sort of sexual abuse or something like that, that's completely different. But if you're a typical human being in a relationship, sex is one of the most important things in the relationship. Hmm. Hands down, no questions asked. When I'm happy you said what you said. I always encourage people to have sex in their relationship to figure out, okay, are we sexually compatible? Because if you're not sexually compatible with someone, that's going to lead you to become bored with them or lead you to cheat, something along those lines, right? Mm. So practice abstinence first. Like you said, fall in love with that person. You don't have to hop right after the first date. You don't have to hop right into bed with that person. I believe 6 months to a year is an adequate time to practice abstinence within a relationship. So you can do, like you just said, fall in love with the individual first, because if sex is not an option, then will you still love that person? And most people don't get to that point. They like, sex is just what they think it is. So they've not had conversations about it. So when sex does not become available now, let's say, for example, your wife, girlfriend, whatever got pregnant, now those hormones gone, she's not into having sex and all of that like that. Now you've gotten yourself into a spot where you become so fixated on the sexual being that you don't realize the human being. And I think that's a huge mistake that we make in our relationships.
Mm. So that's where the cheating comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a product of, I'm not a sugarcoating coach, man. I don't do that. It's your fault. If you cheat, it's your fault, right? It's your fault because you're not articulating to your partner what you need, right? It's point blank period. If you don't tell your partner what you need, yet you go get it from somebody else, that's your fault.
Yeah.
That right? Now, if you articulate to your partner what you need and they can't do that, or they don't feel comfortable doing that, that's a different story. And it's not that you go out and cheat on them. You let them know that this relationship is not going to work for me because you can't meet my needs in this way, shape, or form. The lack of communication is where that cheating comes into play.
Yeah. And since we're that, I'm going to jump on my questions on your August 30, 2001 podcast. It says, can a relationship go back to normal after partner cheats? So my first question is, okay, so you can answer, and if you haven't, I implore you to go and watch that, listen to that podcast on August 30 that Tyrone made. And also, Tyrone, you can answer that question. Can a relationship go back into normal? And the second question is, why is that a question? And kind of the third question is, what is cheating? Because I have a different thoughts about it.
Definition of cheating. Yeah, see. Ah, then you a slick one, huh? I don't think a relationship can go back to normal. If a partner cheats, I think you can design a new normal with therapy, right? So with help, with having conversations, because there's a reason why ex-partner cheated, whether it was a wife or husband or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. There was a reason why that person cheated. So I think getting to the root of why they cheated can allow you both to create a new normal in your life. But saying a relationship going back to normal, quote unquote normal, after a partner cheats, there's no way, because there's always going to be the idea in the back of the one partner's mind that, why did you cheat? What made you cheat? And are you cheating now?
Yeah.
And then the second part of the question was, can you repeat that one?
Yeah, why is that even a question? Can you go back to normal?
I think that's a question because people want two things. The partner that cheated, they want that shit to go back to normal as quickly as possible. As simple as that. Like, they don't want that smoke. They're like, let's just
of course.
That's just hide that. You know what I mean? You know how you throw stuff in the closet and you shut the closet door, like, oh, don't worry about that. Or when your parents come in the room, you used to sweep stuff under your bed real quick, like, whoa, whoa, no, hey, anything clean in here?
Yeah, yeah. That. Stop talking so about that.
Yeah. So that is for the person that cheated. That's the number one thing. They want things to go back to normal, but they selfishly don't realize that there's no going back to normal. Like I see that all the time where it's like, okay, I just want things to go back to how they used to be. And I'm like, well, jackass, they can't go back to how they used to be because you cheated. Yeah. Right. So that I think that comes from the partner that cheated and they don't want to smoke, more or less. They don't want to be held accountable for their actions, or they just want the shit to just go away.
Mm-hmm. And as a relationship coach, you probably saw what I'm about to say, or you probably thought about it. So I wrote here, most people in relationship get upset when their partners have sex outside the relationship and they see it as cheating, while they never discuss relationship rules. And then you did mention something like, of course, communication and the 10, like boundaries, or you use a specific word.
Oh, the non-negotiable list.
Non-negotiable.
Yeah, the 10 things non-negotiable.
See, you're ahead of me. And I'm sure you would be. But if you probably notice, a lot of people add relationships where like you texting sexy photos and that's cheating, or you flirting, that's cheating, but you never had, it's kind of like whose rules. You never had communication. People just assume what you want is what I want. And it just look at life. So this is my thing with the cheating. I had partners, like they want something. And of course people say, oh, that person's cute and I want to do this, whatever. And I'll be like, go for it. And they go like, how could you? They get so mad. How could you do it? Are you cheating? Would you go for it? And I'm just like,
You gotta remember, you're a man, man. That's trouble, man. you letting that door open. They like, wait a minute, what the hell you got going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, I'm supporting you in your thoughts. You looking at that person and you want that person. And it was that a test? It probably was a test.
Yeah. It's usually a test, especially something like that. Boy, you better not take advantage of that, man, because that's usually a test. Like, wait a minute, what the hell you out here doing, boy?
So it is. I feel like people definitely do not communicate, and I never thought of having a 10 negotiable rules or anything.
Negotiable list,
like
that. Man, that's clutch.
And people do not talk about those things. This is why I feel like cheating is a thing, because if you get in a relationship because there's different types of relationship, like monogamous, poly, or open, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had to realize, although I never done it, but I was in monogamous relationships. But then I'm a poly person because I'm okay if my partner did it, but we never talked about those, not never, but eventually in my years, talk about those things, because people go like, oh, don't talk about it. Then you get too deep in a relationship, or the relationship might break, or let's go for what's the norm. And of course it's not a norm, because 50% of people divorce, and a lot of it is because of infidelity. So how is that? Can we make our own rules without following a norm rule that doesn't really exist?
Hell yes. And I'm going to say it again, audience. Hell yes. I hate when people try to follow societal quote unquote norms. That is bullshit. Every rule that was created in our, especially regarding relationship, is bullshit. It's nonsense. That's why you see such a high divorce rate, right? That's why you see so many people breaking up, so many people leaving, because they were told you must fit into this box. And then when they got into that box, it was like, I don't fit into this box. So let me get the hell out of here, right? That's what happens, which you mentioned it multiple times, but it sounds so simple, so easy. But communication, right? If I like this, or if I want to have a threesome, for example, I need to be able to tell my partner I want to have a threesome without feeling like, oh shit, like, oh, society going to say threesomes is wrong. Or if I wanted to have a fivesome, if I wanted to have five women or men with my partner in the bed together and we're all having fun, that's something that we can do because we've discussed it and we're both comfortable with that. Mm. What happens in society is that people don't say anything. Like, you would be surprised. People don't even talk about sex. And I'm like, why the fuck don't you talk about sex with your partner? Like, it's your partner. But there's so much fear in the talk and just having conversations about sex that I think that if again, it just similar to the religious stuff we were talking about, it forces you into a box. And then when you're in that box, you're like, okay, well, I got to sneak out this box some way. And that's where the creeping and the cheating and slandering comes into play, because society told you to fit into this bullshit ass box.
Yep. Yeah. What is your thought on Till Death Do Us Part? I, on my notes, I put equals myth because of the 50% divorce rate. Also, isn't that too rigid because people change? Some people literally change. Because I know in 20 years, I probably changed like 3 to 5 times.
Hell yes, that's another societal.
So Death Do Us Part. What is that?
I think that's something that I don't. It's obviously man-made. I don't even know when it came into play, to be honest with you, because going back to the beginning of Earth, like we were designed to mate and move on. Like going back to the caveman days, like cavemen didn't get.
Oh, like, be careful, Tyrone. She might be watching this.
They didn't get married, so it's like, what the fuck? What are y'all telling us? Like y'all feeding us some bullshit is what y'all doing, really? Yeah. Because they didn't. Like they cavemen, literally the very first human beings would go and have sex with cave women, leave those cave women and go have sex with another cave woman. That is human nature. Like that is what we do. That is what we were designed to do. So when you start talking about shit like till death do us part and all of it, like you start talking about stuff like that, you lost me completely. And the reason why you lost me, because if I get into a situation and I'm miserable, like I love my wife to death. Like I love her more than any woman I've ever met in my entire life. Obviously I'm married to her. Right.
Yeah.
If the dynamics in our relationship shift to a point where I'm not comfortable in my relationship no more, I'm not sticking around in my relationship being miserable for the next we 33 years old. I'm not about to be spending 60 years miserable. You bugging. I'm going to say, hey, baby, we're going to have to figure out how to do this co-parenting thing, because right now my needs aren't being met. And I guess that ties into exactly what you were saying.
If you're not able to love yourself enough to do that, how can you love her?
And that's the thing, too, though. And it's like, yo, you don't love yourself. So how can you love her? Oh, you don't love her. You feel resentment towards her and yourself. Yeah. Why would you stick around in this toxic ass mess of a relationship? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. That's a myth that I think people believe. And it forces people to stay in miserable relationships. I'm always saying, and I always will say, if you've done everything you can do and there's no longer unconditional acceptance in that relationship, it's time to go.
Yeah, certainly. And so what is cheating?
Cheating is very specific to you. Very specific to you. So again, going back to communication, this seems to be the theme of this conversation here. Zen.
Yeah. So if you didn't communicate,
whatever you say. And that's why I tell people be upfront, like be upfront in your relationships. Stop bullshitting with people. Yeah, tell them exactly how you feel, exactly what you want. Like, just be real. Be real. Yeah. Very upfront. Like, yo, listen, this is my version of cheating. If you text a woman, I think that's cheating. If you look at a woman, I think that's cheating. Okay. Now I know. All right.
Don't look at the booty.
Like, this is what she considers cheating. But again, people don't talk about it. So it's like,
yeah,
because your version of cheating is going to be different from my version of cheating. It's going to be different from somebody else's version of cheating. I really don't believe cheating occurs unless you actually have a physical interaction with somebody. Mm-hmm. But then people will be like, well, it started off in the mind and blah, 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 and the flirting and all. Yes. But once you cross that physical line.
Yeah.
To me, that's when I'm like, okay, now
it manifests. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Now it's not only something in your head, you've actually lived this out, right? You're putting these actions into place. But again, I know people that's like, oh, well, if you talk to a coworker a certain way, that's cheating. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that shit. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I want to slap my boss for being stupid and bossy, but if it's in my head, I kept my job. Yeah. I'm out of jail. Yeah. But if I actually punch them, then it went further. Then that's exactly. No one can be like, are you thinking of punching me? You fired.
You're fired. Yeah, man. So it's I love this conversation because it's important for us to have it. And it's important for us to pinpoint the importance of communicating, man. You have to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. How important is it, or is it important for, let's say, let's just talk about a straight relationship, for each partner to have either the different sex friend or have friends that they share mutually? Is that question making sense?
I feel like. Yeah. So like, if, for example, if a woman, is it important for a woman to have male friends?
Yeah. Cause I know a lot of women, the husband would want her to have gay male friends because it's not a threat or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the guy cannot have female friends, period.
Yeah. That stuff to me, that speaks to insecurity. Like that, and again, it's a lot of play. A lot of times it's subconscious. It's not, people are not like literally, oh, I don't like this. It's a subconscious thing. Like we are insecure. Oh, everyone's insecure about something, really. Mm-hmm. But when you are overly insecure like that, to me, that's like, you've been through some things, right? So you've experienced a relationship in which you've been cheated on, or in which your partner lied and said that it would be a place, and then you found out they were at a different place, something along those lines. Those relationships to me are, that's a red flag, frankly. Like that stuff like that is a red flag to me. You don't, if you truly love someone, you don't box them in and tell them what they can and cannot do.
Yeah.
Right. So to tell some, so I'll use my wife for you. To tell my wife, you can't have male friends. Like, I feel like that, why not? Right. If I'm telling my wife that I trust her, if I'm telling my partner that I trust her in all settings. I don't just trust her because she's over there having dinner with my grandma. No, I trust her. I trust her then. I trust her.
Grandma is safe.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, and people, like, we so conditioned, man, that people are really like, all right, grandma over there safe. Meanwhile, grandma be the one telling her, like, girl, back in the day, you don't even know. You know what I'm saying? But no, I think that is in itself, that if someone says that to me, like, oh, I don't want my woman to have male friends, a red flag goes off in my mind. Like, okay, there's some insecurity issues there that they may not be aware of. Mm-hmm. And eventually stuff like that, they do hinder a relationship, because how the fuck can you tell me you trust me, but then you don't trust me around other women? That don't, you either trust me or don't. That's a very like black and white thing.
Yeah. And if you don't, just don't. I'm straightforward like this. I would, when people express doubt, I tell them I respect how you feel and where you are at. You're going to make a decision. Do you trust me or not? And if you don't, we can just leave, and I can love you. It's fine. Like, no hard feelings. But if you're going to be in it, like, don't have this turmoil and this doubt. And like, those are your traumas, and you need to see someone about it, because it's not my issues. And see, that's me being brisk again. Damn it.
Yeah. Well, the only thing there that was a little brisk, that's your issue. You can't tell people that's their issues and they need to tell you. People sensitive, man. That right there. Yeah. Hurt their feelings, man. But that was good. Just take out that you need to deal with it piece. It's like you have your own traumas and maybe you could seek professional help on that. But you need to deal with it. That's like, oh, see? Then it is abrasive. We told you. I mean, what you're getting at is it, right? It's ultimately up to you to deal with that. Don't bring that shit over here, man. Unless so you pay me for it. I definitely will take payment for it. That's what I do.
I have to ask this. Okay, so I want to ask about interracial relationships. And so my question is, I've noticed in the Black community, not so much as it was 10 years ago or before, but I'm kind of like a Malcolm X,
Dr. Umar.
Yeah, or Martin Luther. I would say I'm more like Dr. Umar or Malcolm X, kind of like 65%, and the rest Martin Luther King, probably less. But at the same time, I feel like I'm more of a, I want to see myself as a balance, but I'm just like being truthful. Mm-hmm. Would Dr. Umar and Martin Luther King and Farrakhan, like, I love these men when they speak, and they're So, and I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, being human, we need to be fluid and we cannot be so like boxed or rigid about those things. But I do understand where they're coming from. History and also being a Black person and living it, I do get it. So is it okay? So I know also, as I mentioned, it's important to have a man needs to have a Black woman, or a Black woman needs to have a Black man. And I'm a product of interracial. So can I be like against interracial because I'm a product of it? And I've also noticed.
I think you can. Yeah, you could be. You could be literally whatever you want.
That's true. You know, but what at I mean? The same time, I've noticed. Like, let's say someone who's like, I can't remember their names, but let's say they're like, let's say 50-50 interracial, and then let's say if they get with a Black woman or a Black man, everyone celebrates them. But if they get with their other half, like a white person, people go like, or if they get with someone who's like lighter than them or the same complexion, someone go like, oh, they don't like Black women or they don't like Black men. And I'm like, are we so stuck with the skin color thing? Like, cause me as a person, like people would ask me, actually some lady asked me yesterday, and it's not something I'm hiding. It's just like, that's part of me. And it's not something that I'm having a flag and waving around. And she was like, where are you from? And I know where people are coming from now when they ask that question. I usually, in the past, I used to challenge people, but I was like, you know, now I'm exhausted. So I just told her IET. And she was like, oh, so you're Haitian. And I said, sure, I could be Haitian, but that's not my label. You can look at me however you want, but I don't look at myself. When I look in the mirror, I'm not those specific society titles or labels, and I'm all reduced to that. Where's my humanity? Like, like if you just, if I'm walking down the street and you just, because I remember going in school, they used to call me ugly Haitian. And I remember that I have no issues with that. Like, whatever, like if I'm ugly, fine, that's part of my features. If I'm Haitian, that's part of me. And so what? But people will see those things as those pinpoints. I'm a cliche, but like I'm the son of God and I'm a spirit that's embodying a body that I feel like I didn't choose it. It just is what it is. It's could be a problem for you, but it's not for me. So with that label thing, I feel like we're so stuck on skin color and ethnicity and all this stuff. It makes us blind to what really matters, like love.
But it's our history, man. It's our history. If you look back at, I'm big on history, obviously. So you look back at like slavery, you look back at like the Willie Lynch letter that stated like to put the old people against the young people, the dark skin against the light skin, the strong against the weak, like Black people, like that narrative has just perpetuated throughout history in our society to what it is now. Right now, you, when you're in a lot of different communities, we'll say. So going back to the interracial conversation, I'm like, love who you love. I don't care. Like, I love interracial relationships. I got brothers who, not literal brothers, but figurative brothers that are married to white women and they're happy as hell. So I'm like, who the hell am I to impede on anybody's happiness, right? Because they've tried dating Black women and the Black women called them weird or weren't attracted to them or didn't find them. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
it doesn't shit.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, you know how Black women is. They're very harsh. They don't play when it comes to their mates. So, you know what I mean? That I'm not going to sit here and be the person that tells them, no, keep trying to date Black women, even though they're calling you weird. And even though they're telling you that's not who I am. I'm more of the date who you are happy with. And as long as they're treating you how you need to, or you feel you need to be treated and everyone's happy, more power to you. Right. Because that's how we get to where you're trying to get to. And it's just a human being, forget the color. It's a human being that you love. So I'm not about to knock a human being that you love for anything. But what it does ultimately is that stuff like that makes people feel comfortable. Right. Because it's like, anything that's not normal or not considered quote unquote normal, now it's like not comfortable. And that's why people ask stupid ass questions like, what are you, or where are you from? Or like, just like, it's so ignorant. Like, you'd be like, yo, what the fuck? Like, oh yeah. My God.
You know, I have two friends who don't even know those things about me, and they're in my life for 20 years.
Yeah. So what, and those are the people that you truly connect with, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, in society, we've been bred to see black and white, to see Asian, to see all of that shit. None of that shit really matters, really.
Yep.
You should see past that and see what type of human being that you're dealing with. And then we can move from there. But we have so many barriers in our society. It's like, oh, well, I don't feel comfortable just seeing the human being, so I just got to see you as a black person. Or I've had these downloaded thoughts of how black people act, so you must right. be like that. Oh, you're not like that. Holy shit, what are you? What's going on here? It's just
I'm sorry.
Yeah, listen, I know, man. I've been through it all, so, man. Annoying. You're not the same, you're not like most black people kind of thing, and all that stupid shit.
What the hell like, is that?
I'm telling you, man, people are ignorant.
yeah, wow. Okay, so we've probably heard this a lot, and I don't know if you heard it. I don't fight. Mm-hmm. I hear people. I usually say, and it's something I actually had to look within myself to see if it's ego or if it's true or not. I usually say people fight with me, but I don't fight with people because I accept people unconditionally. I accept people and I love people and I hear and I see them because of the work that I chose to do on myself. So therefore, if I was able to do something for myself, I can do for other people. Mm-hmm. And I tend to get along with a lot of people. And even them, they would tell me, they're like, wow, like, this is weird. This is different. Even people get like shocked. They're like, how do you, so non-reactive or the way you respond is so out of the norm. And they're like shocked and they're like, wow. But so we lead to the question is fighting, because you know that thing they say, if you don't fight, then you're not in a real relationship. To me, it's not real. It's not true because I don't fight with my lovers because I accept who they are. So people say, if you fight, then that makes the relationship true.
No, man, that's that toxic stuff that we were just talking about, man. Like that, when you have those overwhelming narratives like that, though, that's just a lot of people that have been in a lot of toxic relationships. So it's like going back to the crazy eight cycle, right?
Yeah.
The other end of the cycle was the fighting, the verbal abuse, the physical abuse, the whatever. That like people are sparked by that. Like it produces the endorphin release in your brain. Like when you're fighting and you're in those type of relationships where fighting excites you, that's where you get the endorphin release in your brain. And makeup sex comes into play, right? And you do that for so long, now there's a pattern of that in your relationship. And if it's not present in your relationship, you feel like the relationship isn't real. There's not one relationship that I've ever seen, been a part of, coached, spoken to, that's been successful, and they fall. Because when we start talking about fighting, that's a very, very overt thing, right? So fighting is attacking your partner. As opposed to conflict resolution is hearing your partner, hearing their perspective, actively listening to their perspective, sharing your perspective, and then meeting in the middle, right? And then we can talk, that's conflict resolution, as opposed to fighting, which is attacking. We're not attacking each other in conflict resolution. I'm telling you how I see it. You tell me how you see it. Let's meet in the middle. That's where successful relationship, the collaborative process, that's where successful relationships last. That whole fighting thing, if ever you told me, oh, I have to have fighting in a relationship or it's just not real, I would never work with you. I would give you your money back right away. Like, yeah, here, I would take your bread back. Take your bread back. I don't even want to be a part of this type of coaching relationship because you're not going to get it. Like, you don't get it.
Wow. Words wise, you say it's so much perfect because that's exactly how I do it myself and how I think it. Because fighting is, how's that love? When I fight anything, this is why I was saying in the beginning, like I learned to not be against things, especially as of last year when white people, I feel, they were talking about be against racism and they have that against racism thing. And that's fine too. It needs to be where it needs to be because I feel like certain people, it needs to work for them. But for me, I'm not an against person. I like to collaborate. I need to see where that thing is coming from and study the subject and then reach that subject where that subject is, like mm-hmm. in their lives or whatever mm-hmm. it is. Because when you're fighting things, sometimes you're just hitting a brick wall and you never yeah. get through them anyway.
Fighting in itself is an enemy. It's just the resistance. It's just resistance. Yeah. Like once you start talking about fighting, that's yeah. that's okay. All right. We think about it. When you fight, yeah. literally, like if you've ever been in a fight, you had to get ready, right? It's like, oh shit, let me take this off. Women had to grease up their face, like put yeah. their hair up. And you know what I mean? Like that, you're when you talk about fighting, you're preparing to battle. Mm-hmm. That's and this is why you want to be another thing I'm trying to mention. I don't do a good job of always mentioning it, but being very intentional in your relationship, right? When you use words like fighting, that become you're manifesting that, right? So if yeah. I keep saying we're fighting, eventually we're going to fight. But if I mm-hmm. say let's work collaboratively, let's work together, we're a team. Team and fighting don't go together, right? When you say team, that means, okay, we got a conflict, but we got to resolve it because we got to create a win-win situation for both people. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned on your January 4th podcast, 2001, about surviving a narcissistic relationship or a breakup, like post-relationship. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's like, when I went through it myself, I didn't know it was a norm until I was forced to look at a lot of my relationship and I was like, oh, damn, mm-hmm. a pattern, at least for me. And yeah, then now yeah. it's like a keyword now. It's a thing people are waking up to. Mm-hmm. How prevalent is this actually, or is it just minimal? Like narcissistic relationships and...
Oh, yeah. It's very prevalent. Very prevalent. Like you would be surprised how many people are in relationship with narcissists and don't even know it, right? And what I always say is that a narcissist is being in a relationship with a narcissist is a product of how you were raised, right? So you see, yeah. Keep talking about patterns and things that you subconsciously downloaded. If you are used to seeing a narcissist operate in a relationship, that's the type of relationship you're going to gravitate to when you get older, right? So it's like a typical person isn't going to be attractive to you. Like you're not going to find that person attractive because you're so used to seeing a narcissist. You grew up seeing a narcissist. So you gravitate to a narcissist as you get older. Same thing with like drug dealer children too. Like most young women who fathers were drug dealers, they tend to want to date a drug dealer as they get older. So recognizing those patterns is very important to being able to break away from that cycle.
Wow. Life is so complicated.
It really is. So complex, man. It's so complex, man. And that's why it's like every day you got to make a conscious decision to be like, nah, I'm going to do my best, man.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to just say, fuck it, man. Just be like everybody else.
Yeah. I saw a quote that says live on purpose. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, it's very simple. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what, three words on purpose? Yeah. But it made my brain so complicated. I was like, what does that mean? Live on purpose. And then now I get it.
That's probably the hardest thing to do. Those three things are probably the most difficult thing to do in life, right? Because and this is crazy too. The more I kind of come across and meet people and I'm the more successful I am becoming, the more I realize is like, all you got to do is keep shit simple. Like we overcomplicate things, man. You know what I mean? Like that right there, that quote is perfect. Live on purpose. Live on purpose. Are you living in your purpose? Okay. You're not. Get back to what you're doing. Right. The more we can simplify life, I think the better off we all are because there's so many different complexities to it.
So I had to write this because I experienced it a lot. And going back to kind of like when you're saying, the way you communicate is your fault because you're not reaching that person. Mm. And then we did come to the conclusion where like some people are just not reachable and you just gotta cut your losses. Mm-hmm. So I've been in a relationship or even I had roommates where I did the if we talk about something and they keep doing something, I get on their level. I ask, okay, so we talk about this. Where did the disconnect happen? How are we not connecting? Or how do you think we can connect? And what did you hear I said? And how did you receive it? And how can I, letting my ego aside, how can I help you make us reach this kind of a thing? And it's exhausting, but I do it because I need to keep the peace in the house or the relationship. But some people, it's hard to say, are just a brick wall. And we feel that we need to stay with them. Like, let's say a relationship, or let's say if we're married, or parents, or even siblings or family, they're just unreachable and they are impossible. Like, those people, is it possible to have a relationship with them? Or how?
As a relationship coach, I recognize that this comes across as like harsh, but no, like I will never encourage you to waste your time. I would never encourage you to waste your time. I would never like sit here and be like, oh no, just, you know, keep giving grandma a shot. Although she keep telling you to kiss her ass. And although you had those traumatic experiences in the past, keep loving your mom and keep loving. No, that's all like, no. You acknowledge what you need out of that relationship, no matter who it is. You've acknowledged what you need out of that relationship. If a person at any point in time decides that they're not receptive to what you need, then for me, that it's very important that no matter how difficult it may be to do, that you cut your losses. Because if you don't, that's when you start to leave room for resentment to build into play. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'll use this traumatic experience that I had before with my mom. And, for the longest time, she just would not understand like where I was coming from and how difficult this experience was for me in like childhood, because my mom struggled with substance abuse throughout my childhood, hard substance too. So like she struggled with it. And there were periods in my life in which I felt abandoned. Right. So I'm trying to communicate to her that I felt abandoned and it just was not coming through. So I just stopped talking to her for a while. Right. And then once we started talking again, she was more receptive to it and she understood, she was able to take it in more because of the decision I made. Right. It was my decision to be like, listen, either you're going to get this or I have to create some distance in our relationship. And a lot of times, man, people's feet just need to be held to the fire or you got to cut them loose, which is difficult for us, especially if you're empathetic and you're an empath. It's very difficult to just let people go, especially people you love. But as far as I'm concerned, letting them go sooner is better than letting them go later and being hurt.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because Susie Orman would say sometimes helping is hurting. Sometimes hurting is helping. But she also, she often mentioned that about financial advice. Sometimes you giving money is hurting somebody. And sometimes she's a billionaire. And then she says she won't give someone a dollar. And people go like, what's a dollar to you? She's like, because sometimes giving a dollar is hurting them. Yes. And sometimes withholding that dollar is helping them because they come back and then they create their own shit instead of like asking for a handout because you're a billionaire. Yeah. You got to give me.
And that's the thing too, she's onto something, because doing that, it creates entitlement in people. Like, oh yeah, well you're supposed, you're a billionaire, you're supposed to do that, you're a billionaire. It's like, fuck no, I worked hard for this bill, man, you better get your ass up and go work for yours.
Exactly. Wow, this was, thank you so much. It was an honor.
I appreciate it. This has been amazing.
You and I'm so grateful because you didn't have to talk to me. And I'm so grateful that you did that. And I love the conversation. And I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people. It had helped me. And so how can people who's listening or seeing this reach out to you and collaborate with you with the work that you do?
Yep. You can reach me at my podcast, TQLP20@gmail.com. You can also shoot me some questions if you have relationship questions or questions about if you're in a relationship with a narcissist. I got you covered on both ends with that. My Twitter handle as well as my Instagram handle is CEO_ATC. You can reach me on Facebook at my name, Tyrone Dixon, nationally certified relationship coach. I'm just here to help everyone get their relationship right. And I have to say this before I leave. Please understand, audience, the quality of love and relationships that you have in your life really determines the quality of your life, right? So start holding these people to the fire. If they're not bringing anything to the table for you, make sure that you get them out of your life. And I know it can be difficult at first, but you got to do it, man. You got to do it.
And it's funny you said that. I had a conversation with a coach 3 days ago, and she mentioned that. She was like, stop dealing with... I mean, it's harsh to say low level, because as a spiritual being, I don't see people like that. But for the material world, we have to differentiate those things, and they exist. I have to meet people on my level, and I need to understand. And I do understand, like, seeing the patterns why I was reaching down to a lower frequency. And I think part of it is like because how I see myself. And I think part of it is too because of having empathy and understanding the underdog and trying to understand them. But I can do that as a job or like a thing, but I don't need to have it as a personal relationship. Yeah. And I think that's why I'm making it wrong. I'm like making a personal relationship when I can just like be a psychiatrist or a therapist or and then leave it at that.
Yeah.
And don't need to. Yeah. So that's my own work to do as well. And
that's awesome, brother, man. You're going to be a great, you'll do a great job at it, man. You're phenomenal.
Yeah, I would love to do that, actually. But I don't want to go to school. I don't want to be in school.
I bet. Yeah, man. Listen, you should look into coaching. I bet you there's some type of coaching certification that you can do without having to be in school. That'll allow you to get that same type of interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've been denying. Actually, this funny thing is, I think on my first episode on the podcast, I mentioned how this interaction, I've been denying it all my life. Because like it would even like people would find me on the street to talk to me. And I was like, denying it. And up until 2020 and then lit on to 21, I was like, you know what? I'm done denying myself. I'm done denying life. Let me just flow with life.
This is your purpose, man. I can. This is you, man. This is your thing. I think you could do phenomenal at it. Seriously, you just lean into it. It sucked, especially. I'm not even gonna pretend in front. Like I had, like when I first started it, it sucked. I hated it. I did. Like I hated talking to people. I hated like having to be empathetic and being like, okay, all right, it's for the goodness, man. I hated all of it. But after a while, it's like, okay. Once you start to see the positive impact that you have on people, it's like, all right, it's worth it to check. I still have those days where I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Do what I tell you to do. Do what I tell you to say. Shut up and do it.
Yep.
So yeah, it's you have those days, but man, I think you're on to something for sure, brother.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you. And so anything lastly you want to say that I didn't cover that you wanted to say before we go?
Actually, I just remembered. I've been promising my audience that I will always say the five elements to a lasting relationship in any interaction that I have. So thank you for reminding me. In order to have a lasting relationship, I believe you have to have these five elements. And that goes for anyone. Number one is trust. Right. Trust, respect, all of those things kind of tie in together. So I just nail it down and consolidate it into trust. Number two is communication. More importantly, communication with dialogue. So back and forth communication, you not dominating the conversation and you actively listening to what your partner needs. Number three, we talked about it a little earlier, but just knowing your partner's love and apology languages specifically. So you can specifically speak to how to love on them and how to apologize to them. Number four is shifting with the dynamics. Now, we talked about it a little earlier, but I didn't put the label on it. I don't care how long your relationship is, how long it lasts, how long you plan on it lasting. There's going to be a dynamic shift within your relationship at some point in time. Either you're going to go from dating to boyfriend and girlfriend to engaged to married, all of these different dynamics. You're going to have kids. You're going to meet the in-laws. Boy, you better be prepared for that, right? Put on it. So there's just all these different dynamics that are always at play in life, and they have an impact on your relationship, right? So being able to positively shift with the dynamics of life ends up having a lasting relationship. And then lastly, the fifth thing is unconditional acceptance, right? It's accepting your partner for who they are, and also working with them and knowing that they're working on being the best version of themselves that they can be.
Wow.
So those five things are what you need in order to have a lasting relationship.
This is going to be a clip. Yeah, definitely. Wow, that's amazing. And especially the unconditional. I feel like we're born like that, because if you, mm-hmm. even looking at your children, mm-hmm. their unconditional love, they're the meaning of it.
Yeah.
And somehow we're learned to do the ugly part. And so, yeah, that's going, we need to go back to base one, those five things you mentioned.
Yeah, and that's, if you want a lasting relationship, I always say that's where it is. And then I have to say this, because I promised my coach that I would challenge people that always use unconditional love. Uh-huh. I use unconditional acceptance as opposed to unconditional love, because I used to say unconditional love, though, and then he kind of checked me, and what he said made sense. He was like, okay, think of the person you love the most, and you can do this too. Think of the person you love the most in your entire life, throughout life. And I'm like, oh, yeah, my grandma. I love my grandma. I never was upset at my grandma ever. He's like, okay, was there ever a time you were upset with your grandma? And I'm like, yeah. And he was like, did you still love her unconditionally? I'm like, probably not, because if I loved her unconditionally, you wouldn't be able to get upset, right? So he's like, what happens is when you talk about unconditional love, you're setting yourself up, because the person you love most, at some point in time, they're going to piss you off. It's going to happen. It's how life works. So instead of setting yourself up with unconditional love, practice unconditional acceptance instead, because that way you're meeting that person where they are, and not having this high pedestal expectation for them, and they're human.
Thank you.
So I had to share that. That's it. That's all I got.
Thank you for sharing that. Beautiful. Amazing. Wow. All right. I'll let you go. And thank you again.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate your time there.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Tyrone.
All right. Blessings. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye.